This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Welcome to Season 2 of the Unconquered Podcast. Today on the show, we're going to talk to Wayne McGahee about the opening of Florida State's preseason camp, where we'll talk about primarily defensive stuff today, and then the next time we'll talk to Wayne, we'll talk about some offensive stuff. But let's go ahead and get right to it. We'll talk about how Florida State looked in this opening scrimmage and lots of other stuff on today's episode. We're joined today by Wayne McGahee, who has been providing some terrific coverage for us from down inside the practice circle. So, Wayne, let's get to talking about what we've been seeing down there. And I guess the first thing to really talk about here is, you know, obviously everybody's been talking about this the Jalen Ramsey situation and all that. I mean, it's a non-issue as far as I'm concerned. You know, these things happen a ton. That, you know, in closed practices that people just don't see, but obviously, you know, this is something that everybody wants to hear about. So, what do you have to say? Anything extra on the Jalen Ramsey situation and where things are now?
Well, when you're on top of the mountain, everything gets overblown. What most people don't realize is that earlier today, Miles Jack, the two-way star for UCLA, got kicked out of his own practice. But you haven't heard a word about it on any of the big sites because it's not that big of a deal. It happens. You know, some of the best players during the Jimbo Fisher era have been thrown out of practices. Telvin Smith, LaMarcus Joyner. Jameis Winston was thrown out of practice before the national championship game.
Yeah, and actually, in that case, for a similar reason, actually. I mean, it was not because of being overly physical, but because Fisher basically felt like Winston had kind of challenged his authority in practice. And something that, you know, Fisher does in these kind of environments, the thing you got to understand about Fisher is, you know, he's always got the psychology hat on here. And one of the things that he does is he periodically, he's actually just going to kick a guy out just because somebody needs to be kicked out. So, you know, with the Winston thing, I mean, after the national championship game, you know, he talked about that and he said, you know, at some point you've just got to be able to show that, you know, that it's your show. I mean, this is my program and we're going to do things the way that I want to do it. And if you're not going to do it my way, then you're not going to play. And that starts with, you know, it starts at the top with guys like Jameis and with guys like Ramsey. And you notice those are the guys that are getting kicked off. Guys that he actually typically trusts, guys that are leaders. And, you know, this is an interesting thing if you think about the way that Fisher does this is and actually, by the way, just before I go into that, I actually had a teacher in high school who sort of let me in. My grandfather had been a teacher at that school, you know, for some years. And so this guy actually knew who I was when I was in his class and kind of took me aside at one point after he had kicked a guy out of class and sort of chuckled and winked at me and saying he had a theory that basically you needed to kick one person out per semester in a really dramatic fashion and you would basically control your class. And so he would make sure to take that opportunity when it happened. And he really did on this guy. And everybody was always terrified of this professor of this teacher. Partially because of how he did that, and he played with people's minds. Fisher does the same stuff. And the interesting thing, and this is what I think is smart, and my suspicion is that he got some of this from Saban, is he's not kicking out the low guys on the totem pole. He's not picking a freshman. He's not kicking out a Keelan Smith or somebody, I mean, that isn't playing big minutes. He's kicking out LaMarcus Joyner, clear leader. Telvin Smith, clear leader. Jameis Winston, clear leader. He's kicking out guys that everybody else looks up to precisely because he doesn't want to lose his team and precisely because he wants to maintain a certain level of discipline and make sure that everybody's on the same page and everybody's listening to his voice. That's actually interesting when you compare that to, like, Urban Meyer, for example, down at Florida, where really the inmates got control of that prison. In I think we can justifiably call Gainesville a prison in this kind of environment, but yeah, I mean, you look at what happened. They started recruiting some really major talent at Florida in Meyer's last few years, and the program got out of control. And one of the things that you heard was that Meyer actually seemed to have sort of an inner circle of the really talented, really really good players that he kind of let run the show, and that he allowed to get away with stuff that other players couldn't. And so it ended up being kind of a two-tier thing. I can't remember the term. It's like the circle of trust or something like that people talked about with Meyer, with his players. But basically that backfired badly. I mean, they're still digging out of the hole that they really got into. I mean, they had tons of talent, but they got into a major discipline hole before Muschamp got there, and really haven't recovered from it since. Fisher does exactly the opposite. He takes his most talented and most well-respected players, and he holds them to an even higher standard, and basically shows, and you know, I've talked to him about this before, but he talks about how he's going to hold them to an even higher standard and show that I'm going to be harder on Jameis than I am on the rest of you, because I want you to see that the leader can take what I'm doing, and he's going to follow what I'm saying. So when I'm asking it from everybody else, they know that I'm not treating the leaders with a softer edge than them, and so they're going to listen. So I think that's a big part about this that people don't understand in terms of the way that Fisher runs his program. He's going to kick out guys that he likes.
Paradox. He's going to kick out guys that can handle it.
Yep. Absolutely right. And Ramsey is without a doubt one of those guys that can handle it. I mean, there's not been a better kid in the program.
Nope. I mean, and Jimbo told us that like right afterwards. You know, the next day, you know, we get to talk to him after practice. He scheduled, we weren't supposed to be able to talk to him. And then he scheduled it to where we could talk to him. And he just, you know, raved about Ramsey as a person, talking about how, you know, he let his emotions get the best of him. And so did Jimbo. But, you know, as soon as they step off that field, it's over. And they had a good talk, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a good talk. I remember hearing about the good talk that he and Jameis had as well after Jameis got kicked off the field before the BCS national title game.
Talk is a loose term.
Yeah,
it's probably more like I'm going to dictate to you and you're going to listen.
Well, what's interesting is it's with some of these players, like with Jameis, you're going to get some of these guys will give it back, and there are shouting matches that happen. And the interesting thing is that Fisher lets that happen to a degree. He wants that to happen. He wants his players to have say, but he's going to make sure that his word is law at the end. And that's where the conversation's going to end up. But he's going to let the player vent, which is also another interesting thing. But these talk is a relative term, yes. So anyway, yeah. So that as far as the Ramsey situation goes, I think we're agreed that there's just not much to it beyond Fisher really wanting to kind of send a message, not just to Ramsey here, but to the team. And you know, there's been some one of those things when you have a team that's returning from a national championship the year before and has lost some real leaders. That's one of the things you really got to focus on in camp, and that's something they're paying a lot of attention to. Word from within the practices, the parts that we can't see as media, the word from inside is that the coaches are actually riding the guys harder than they did last year. That there's been more of a little bit more of an edge as they're really trying to make sure that this team is tough and doesn't get lackadaisical, doesn't lose their edge. And that's something that I think they've really focused on. All right, so let's go ahead and move to then the next bit, which is, of course, we had a scrimmage today. And there's lots to talk about with the scrimmage from we're recording this on Tuesday, from today's scrimmage. And you know, there's tons to talk about. So I mean, I guess we can start with to me what is the biggest concern going into this season which was the defensive tackle situation. And I think most of the listeners will know that I was extremely high on Derek Nnadi and on Christmas in particular, coming in to be able to contribute right away. You know, I felt Nnadi would be a guy that would be able to come in and get minutes right away. I talked some to Jimbo Fisher during ACC kickoff, and you know, he just raved about the way that Nnadi came in and insisted that Nnadi would actually be better coming in than Timmy Jernigan arrived as a freshman, and that ultimately he'd probably end up being a better player, which is obviously saying a ton, because Timmy was dominant as a freshman. You know, one of those guys who came in with just ridiculously strong hands and the ability to anchor, and you know, they were able to two gap with Timmy from the beginning. So anyway, Nnadi and those guys are obviously something we should talk about. What have you seen from the defensive tackles and the parts that you've been able to see, and also what are you hearing?
Well, Derek Nnadi has during the scrimmage was working with the ones today, which is a really good sign in some cases, but it's a really bad sign in others, because you have to think about where that puts, you know, Keith Bryant on the list. Because Derek Mitchell and Shanks, they were, you know, we didn't really expect much from them, but Keith Bryant was someone that we expected a lot from, and the light just hasn't gone on with him. So right now you're looking at a starting rotation of Goldman and Stample, with Holland and Nnadi coming in, but Nnadi is also working in with the first team, so he may take Stample's job about halfway through the season. I don't think he'll start out with it, but I think that he, if he shows, you know, the progress that he's making already, that he could take that job about halfway through the season.
Well, he is a good bit more talented, without a doubt, than Lawrence Stample. And you know, I like Lawrence Stample.
Very true.
You know, he does need, the other issue is that Lawrence Stample's injury did hold him back from being in quite as good a condition as he needed to be coming into camp. You know, he's working himself into condition, but last year he had a little bit of bad weight that did hurt him at certain points. And Nnadi, as far as I can tell, doesn't have any bad weight. So
none there whatsoever. He is a very, very strong kid, too. That was what set Jernigan apart as a freshman, and that's what's going to set Nnadi apart, because he is just strong.
Yeah, as far as from what I understand, he still has a good ways to go in terms of understanding leverage and getting his hands inside and working on his hand placement and some of the finer things of being a defensive tackle at this level when you're playing against guys that you just can't throw around like ragdolls like you could in high school. But yeah, I think you're probably right that he winds up taking. I'm not sure he even winds up starting. I think you might see Lawrence Stample keep the starting job. But I think he winds up playing the starter's minutes, playing the bulk of the minutes by the end of the year. The hard part with these freshmen is, you know, they're not used to playing the same number of snaps over the course of the year that you have to play at the Division I level, especially if you're going to play 15-game playoff season. And that's something they're going to have to be really careful about with some of these guys in terms of, you know, your Nnadis, your Christmases, these guys who, you know, they come in as freshmen and they can help right away. What you want to make sure is that you don't give them too many snaps early on and cause them to wear down a little bit late in the year. You don't want them to hit the freshman wall, as you might call it, where they're just not used to playing that many snaps over the course of the year. That's something that I think we're going to have to pay attention to, is how many snaps they get early, because you do want to see Keith Bryant and some of these other guys. You want to see 3 and 4 defensive tackles over the course of the year take a lot of snaps, because of the strain and the stress that taking so many snaps over the course of the year on the inside, where it's just a real war, takes. And that's something that as a freshman, even when you come in like a Nnadi, you're still going to have to monitor that. And that's something I think that they're going to worry about with the catapult system and other things to help them know where they need to be. But what about some of the others that you've seen? So Christmas and Arthur Brown and Fred Jones and some of these others.
Yeah, Christmas is probably 5th on the depth chart. He's actually probably – I've heard that he's ahead of Keith Bryant as well. Bryant's just free fall. He didn't put in – you know, it's from what I heard, he didn't put in the time during the offseason, and it's hurt him now, because two freshmen have come in and passed him, and Holland is, you know – he's going to get more playing time than Bryant is. And Holland's a very interesting case because he's not that big. He's only around 280 as of right now.
Which, for the record, is bigger than the Florida State defensive tackles starting in, say, 2007 and 2008 and 2009, which Bud Thacker, Kendrick Stewart, some of these guys, that tells you just how far Florida State has come since, say, 2009, when 280 would have been Holland would have been a pretty big defensive tackle and would have been one of the better athletes on the defensive line at that point. And he's the small guy on this defensive line.
What makes him valuable, though, is that he can slide out to the outside on a 3-4 line, and he can play the end, which means that in the three-man lines that we've been seeing, it's been Walker, Goldman, and Edwards. But you can't play that. You know, those three can't play at all times. So you're going to see some of the defensive tackles slide out to the end range, and you're going to see Holland taking down one of the end spots because he's athletic enough to do it, and he's still big enough to play on the line.
Yeah, and that's another thing. When you say that Christmas is in the five slot, I think you're lumping the nose tackle and defensive tackles together, which they don't necessarily do on this defense. They do slide in and out somewhat. But from what I gathered from Fisher in over ACC kickoff weekend, Christmas is really he's really at that Goldman position. That's really where he sits. Is you know, basically in that 3/5 position where he's gonna, you know, it's a kind of defensive tackle hybrid defensive end. And again, that's where Holland's ability, his flexibility, and his quickness offers a lot of flexibility. In terms of what they can do defensively and what kind of looks they can use and all that. What have you seen and heard in terms of Christmas again? So, you know, you're saying he's fifth on the chart, so I guess that puts him behind, really puts him at third at that 3-5 technique, I guess, behind Goldman and Holland. What basically are you gathering from what you've seen here?
He's another guy that's just extremely strong with very violent hands. It's going to take him a little while to get the playbook down, from what I've heard, but they love his hands, the way, you know, he just throws people around and how strong he is. But it's going to take a little while for the light to come on, but he's there. It's going to, you know, he'll be there throughout the season.
Yeah, he's one of those guys I actually expect to get more reps as we get deeper into the season, maybe starts out a little bit behind Nadi, where the nose tackle position is really one that you can come into a little bit earlier because it's more about the physical stuff. And I think there's more of a need at that nose position. And what you were saying about Keith Bryant, you know, that's the real disappointing thing is that, you know, he's a guy with enough talent to really make a difference in there, but he has not remade his body. I mean, he's still got some bad weight on him. He's about 10 pounds of bad weight. He still moves remarkably well for that, but he just doesn't have the raw sort of coming from the butt power that you really want at that position that he could have had coming out of a really strong summer. And that's fairly frustrating, but I think with Nadi, you know, you're getting that number one or two spot settled with him and Lawrence Stample, and really at that point you just need Bryant to be good enough to make sure that, you know, he can handle full second halves and things and split that with Shanks and some others as the snaps add up, you know, especially early in the season.
Shanks has a lot of bad weight on him right now.
And Shanks has always had a lot of bad weight on him.
Yeah, like it hasn't gotten any better. He's humongous and He looks huge, but it doesn't look like, if you look at the defensive lineman that we've mentioned so far, and you look at Shanks, it's night and day. Like even Arthur Williams is huge. Like that's a big boy. None of them look like Shanks does.
Yeah, Williams is a good 325
easily, and he moves so well for a guy that big.
I mean, he's
surprised that Trickett hasn't tried to get him on the offensive line.
He makes Goldman look small, relatively speaking. I mean, Goldman is a big, big man. I mean, Goldman is huge. And Arthur Jones makes him, Arthur Williams makes him look smallish, you know. And I think Arthur may have the most upside in terms of some of these three guys. I'm curious on seeing whether or not how much he sees the field, you know, this year. But either way, I think the interior is going to be, as long as we don't see injuries there. You know, I think that with Nnadi and Christmas's additions, with as ready to play as they came in, I think Florida State will be good enough there to be potentially better across the board than they were last year. I do think that you'll see a little bit of a drop off from say Timmy last year, and you know, last year they had not just Timmy but McAllister and McDaniel that they could throw in there for rotation, so that helped. And I think you'll see a little drop from there, but I'm not sure how much at this point with the emergence of some of those freshmen. So staying on the defensive line, some other guys that Jimbo said flashed in this scrimmage. One of them is maybe my favorite recruit from this class is Ricky Leonard. So what are you seeing there?
I mean, what more could you ask for? The kid's 6'7", 275. Jimbo raves about this kid. Not because he's going to get to the quarterback six times a game, but because he gets his hands up and you can't throw around him. Like you're going to throw the ball high if you try to throw around him, because the kid has long arms. He's already 6'7", so you're going to either have to float the ball or try to find a lane, and it's just not happening.
And he runs like a receiver. I mean, or a tight end at least. I mean, that's the thing that's interesting about him is that he does not look like a defensive end when he runs.
No, his footwork's there. His lower body is looks great. I mean, the legs are there, the footwork's there. What he needs to work on is the upper body strength. His arms are a little small, but that'll come with time. I mean, we're talking about the Florida State strength and conditioning program that took, you know, Stork from a 230-pound tight end to 300-pound center.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is when you look at these guys, you want to, you know, the concern is when you look at them and they're smaller on the lower end. That's harder to deal with. It's much easier to add some weight up top as a guy already has that strong base. But yeah, Leonard is, I think, he's going to be an interesting case because, you know, one of the things that this defense was limited by a little bit last year. Was as much as they were able to rotate players with McAllister and McDaniel and some of those guys at the defensive tackles, Lawrence Stample, Timmy Jernigan, Goldman, these guys, you know, a lot of those guys were able to rotate in and out, you know, over the course of the year. Goldman got more valuable progressively as the year went on, and he took more snaps, say, in the last couple games, particularly against Auburn, because of what he can do. You know, as a two-gapper, taking on a blocker head up and accounting for both gaps on either side of the blocker. But the guy that really didn't come off the field when it mattered was Mario Edwards. Florida State did not have anybody that could sub for him. They just didn't have any options there that could be a viable replacement for what Edwards offers. And, you know, I've kind of laughed, you know, Matt Hayes, for example, from the Sporting News listed Edwards as a boom or bust player this year and talked about, you know, as though he were a disappointment. And it just doesn't, it displays a lack of understanding of what his role is in the Florida State defense. And you
it
mentioned
displays a lack of understanding of football in general.
Well, it's Matt Hayes, but anyway, the role of that position in the Florida State defense is not to get 10, 15 sacks. I mean, that's not the Peter Boulware Florida State defensive end spot. They're
Although
not playing that
great.
Kind of defense. Oh, those were great years, but the game has changed a good bit. I mean, you know, there's a reason, you know, those defenses were a big reason that teams started going to spread offenses and trying to get the ball out of their quarterback's hands really quickly. Because, you know, Florida learned very quickly and, you know, they learned eventually. I mean, it was in 1996 that, you know, getting Danny Werfel pummeled is not the way to win, you know, and they ended up, you know, spreading it and putting him in the shotgun and having more success, unfortunately, with that. When
if
they got
we
could their,
just not talk about 96, that'd be great.
Yeah. When they got their undeserved rematch there, but,
Flew.
Yeah.
The entire team had the flu.
Yeah, that's another issue altogether. But, you know, that's one of the reasons that so many of these teams nationwide went to the offenses that are popular now. And so defenses have had to adjust. You can't just line those guys up and tell them to go to the quarterback now, because quarterbacks are getting rid of it more quickly against that stuff. And what you're able to do with a guy like Edwards, who, yeah, he's 290 pounds, and people are looking at him and going, well, you just look too big to be a defensive end. Yeah, but he can do a standing backflip in his pads. And, you know, the guy has insane mobility and has, you know, an insane bend and ability to do all sorts of things. He can get around the edge as well as a 260-pound guy. But he also can two-gap from that position and gives you that flexibility to move him where you want and to do a lot of things with him. And so, you know, yeah, he may not have 10 sacks, but he's critical to everything you're doing on the defense. And, you know, the national championship game.
He could if he wanted to, but that's not the way, you know, that's not his job. Plays in this defense. That's not his role.
Right. So he was so critical to defense, and you look at, you know, he actually beat Cam Robinson in the national championship game. He won that matchup against a top five pick in Cam Robinson, doing his job, but he didn't come off the field in that game. And this is where a guy like Leonard, who offers that 275 pounds, 6'7", gives you some length, gives you some size, you know, has some starting to show some of that ability. You wonder whether or not he's going to be able to take some of that edge off of Edwards. A few reps as the year goes on, given them starting to go that way, and that also frees 44. That frees Walker up to be able to move a little bit over onto the other side as well. Where I'm a little bit more skeptical about what Florida State's going to get from Chris Kasher, who, you know, a lot of people have looked at as a potential breakout candidate. I'm a little bit less bullish on Kasher at this point. I'm kind of in a wait and see, and he's going to have to show me something perspective here on Kasher. And I think we may be seeing some by committee at that position by the end of the year, unless he does take a step forward. So, I mean, that I'm sure you've got plenty to say there.
Yeah, Matthew Thomas has actually stepped into the role that Chris Kasher's been holding down. He's seeing more time with his hand in the dirt, and Jacob Pugh, before he got hurt, was also seeing time at that position. But Kasher's the main guy there. Today, however, during the scrimmage, DeMarcus Walker was working opposite of Mario Edwards in every set, whether it was the 5-2, the 4-3,
there we go,
or the 3-3-5.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, again, and that tells me that they feel very comfortable about where Leonard came in, and that they feel like he can give them some reps behind Edwards, and that gives them the ability to move Walker around a little bit and use him on the edge there. So that's a very good sign again. So, you know, there's as far as Kasher, why don't you fill us in a little bit on that as well, because I'm sure there's more that you can offer on that. I mean, I know that he has a rep for having skipped leg day quite a bit in his couple years on campus, and I think it shows. I think he's a little light in the butt, and there are times where, you know, I'd just like to see a little more explosiveness from him, given his physical talent, than what I see. He doesn't flash enough to me at the position that he's playing, which should be more of a sack position. He plays the end in this defense that should have a little bit more of that.
Absolutely. And it shows that he has so much talent, but he's not doing as much with it as he should be. When Coach Sal, every day, we're talking spring and fall, has just constantly been yelling at him for not being in the right position. I don't know if his head's not in it or if he's just not, you know, I mean, if he just doesn't understand, but Coach Sal is always yelling at Chris Kasher for not being in the right position. And, you know, it shows he's in position to start this year, but how long he starts at that position is going to depend on how well he learns. Because right now, he doesn't get it.
Yeah, and I mean, when you see coaches yelling at players like that, I mean, that's both a sign that they think he could be good enough to, you know, to that he's good enough to waste your breath on, but it also is a sign, you know, when it's not letting up, that it's a sign perhaps that, you know, things aren't getting through like you'd hope. But at any rate, I think the real loss there is Oligwe, who at this point is, you know, the plan is not to get him, you know, he's not going to be back at least until Clemson. And given the surgery he had, I'm skeptical on whether or not he'll be back anywhere near full strength even at that point. Because I actually think he was the guy that would have really been the guy at that spot. Yeah, I know he played a lot in the inside, you know, during the spring, but I think they were kind of moving things around a lot in the spring. He's the guy that on the edge really has flashed to me and has shown, you know, a lot of pop and explosiveness. And you know, he's a guy that's always around the quarterback whenever he was rushing. So, you know, he and Matthew Thomas are the guys I'd really like to see in rush situations there. And with him out, I think Thomas is ultimately going to be that guy in a lot of those sets.
Yeah, Jimbo's been he's been raving about Matthew Thomas's ability to get to the quarterback. And, I mean, anybody who's seen his high school film should know why. Kid's yeah, freak.
He's but, like a shark.
But, yeah, Matthew Thomas is working with the second team right now. Casher has that spot. We'll see how long he can hold on to it.
Yeah, and you know, it probably would be good for the team if he's able to hold on to that, because it would suggest that, you know, he's earned some trust over the course of the first few games. But I think he's just going to have to take a step forward at this point. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks, Wayne, for joining us, and we'll be right back here in a day or so with plenty to talk about on the offensive side of the ball. But welcome back to season two. If you know somebody that's a Florida State fan that wants to get more information on Florida State stuff, of course, share this podcast with them. We'd love the company. Let them know about the work we're doing over at Noll Digest. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. I made this.